so am I, still waiting, waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Stone Cold can be as dangerous, as psychotic as any human being that ever laced his boots.
At Unforgiven, Austin, I'm going to show you how stone cold I can be.
At Unforgiven, it will be The Rock defending the WCW Championship against Booker T and Shane O'Mac.
No way can The Rock keep the WCW title.
Angle slam! An angle to Steve Austin with the angle slam!
Steve Austin will never forgive Kurt Angle for this night!
For what I did.
Shane O'Mac soars through the air!
And Shane dropped his heart right into the heart of the Broma Bull.
And Unforgiven, it's going to be you two who have to forgive The Rock for taking his right
hand.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. I am John Pollock. He is Wei Ting. Wei, I am looking forward to this review. I think this show is going to be a solid start to our second season.
I really, I know we mentioned this way, way back, but I do listen to our podcast sometimes when I'm bored. I like to listen to the
sound. What do you mean when you're bored?
Well, when I feel the need to listen to the sound of my own voice, I like to hit play on my iPod and listen to Review Away. And I have noticed every time we come off of the law, where there's so much high energy. It's just such a highly, highly energetic show. You have Jason, and you have the mouth. Mouth saying, brother. And then,
But then we have the two musical interludes separating it.
And then
it comes to us.
Well, and then it's just like a dead stop in the energy. It's just like the two of us inside this little room with nobody here, no clock, and complete dead personality.
You should really be in public relations, because boy, do you know how to really sell us to people that might be just sampling us for the first time. Then the show comes to a dead stop when John and Wei come on.
Well, I'm just pointing out some observations. We criticize TV products all the time. I feel the need to
criticize ourselves
once in a while.
Granted.
Why not?
Sure.
Not to say it's a bad thing. Some people prefer that it's just two guys talking, not produced, no music.
We have a shoestring budget, and we're still looking for the shoestring.
Yes.
Let's get into our review, Wave, because this show, we're going to go through your feedback, and I've got a contest.
Wow.
Contest.
Wave.
Not everything needs some ringy, catchy title attached to it, Wei. It's just, this is what's going to happen on the show.
Okay.
That's all. Are you going to be okay?
Yeah, I'll be fine.
You're hammered. It's late on a Sunday night, and this is the most energy you've ever had on a Sunday.
I'm on a medium coffee and 3 hours of sleep. I actually just watched this pay-per-view this morning.
So you watched Unforgiven, then you watched Night of Champions illegally, then The Law, and now this. You are a trooper, Wei.
I did all that, yes. Wow. And I went to church.
Well, this is my weekly visit to church.
Yes.
Review Away is my religion.
There you go.
All right, everyone. WWF Unforgiven, September the 23rd of 2001. You know whose birthday it is on September the 23rd, Wei? Matt Hardy.
Really?
Who has been all the talk online this week. Have you been following the beef between him and Paul London?
I have heard Paul London's comments. I haven't heard Matt Hardy's response.
He's now apparently, he wants video of Paul London's message to him for his lawyers.
Okay, is he requesting that from Paul London himself?
No, he's asking fans online to send him the video, which is pretty accessible if you just, like, search for it online. Yeah. But nonetheless,
so what, for
big
the people,
beef between those
for
two.
For the people who don't know, what has Paul London said about Matt Hardy?
Well, you can go to my Friday update because I posted the link to the video in there, but essentially he's got a flip cam and he's focusing it on Matt Hardy's YouTube post from last week. And you can see Paul London's reflection in the computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts making fun of Matt Hardy's nose. And he's like, the real problem is your nostril issue your McDonald's problem. And then he starts just going off on him. And then he finishes it off by mocking Matt Hardy's speech. Like, he says that, as everyone can see, I have not been sent home. And then Paul London looks around at his yard. Actually, I am home. So those two, not the best of friends.
Perhaps they are building towards an indie
blow off.
Yes.
Yeah.
An indie Chael Sonnen type of feud.
Yeah. Paul London is playing.
That'll draw 5,000.
Chael Sonnen.
At the Ted Reeve Arena.
Maybe way. We went off on that story from announcing the date of this pay-per-view. Took place in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You know who's from Pittsburgh?
Who?
At the Mellon
Let's
Arena.
Get on onto another tangent.
Let's talk about Mark Madden and Bruno Sammartino.
Oh, wow.
Kurt Angle.
They're
Pittsburgh's
all
finest. The Mellon Arena, folks, and your announcers tonight, which guarantees an entertaining show, Jim Ross and Paul Heyman. I really enjoy going back to these pay-per-views to hear Jim Ross, because I still get my, well, not weekly, but at least a couple of months, a couple of times each month, we usually get a Jim Ross event.
Yeah.
He is so missed right now.
You know what? I haven't even really thought about that, because to me, he is still, in my mind, the primary voice of the WWE/F, and I don't even think that he's no longer around anymore.
As much as all of the talent has changed, he was your link to a completely different time period in professional wrestling, and there's not one announcer right now in the WWE that has that connection, not even Jerry Lawler to me.
No.
He might, you know, age-wise be linked there, but it's just, I'm just not happy with the current commentary situation.
Are you not a fan of Michael Cole's performances on NXT?
To be honest, a lot of people are going crazy about him, you know, this heel role, and he does it well, but it's not something that I'm tuning in to see. It's not something that, it's fine in short, in small doses, but this is also the guy who is the play-by-play person on Raw, and I think he's just, just pick a role for this guy and go with it. He's a very good heel.
Yeah.
But
it's not the role of a Jim Ross.
No. I'm so glad they never remember when they tried to make Jim Ross a heel?
Yeah.
It failed miserably.
But anyway, it made for some great YouTube moments ten years later. I was talk about Paul Heyman. I was very, very happily surprised to hear that this was the show with his commentary on it, because the two of them together was one of my favorite commentary teams. Paul Heyman, just a guy that knows professional wrestling so well, knows his role so well in getting the heels over. In this particular instance, he was aligned with the Alliance and did his best to get everybody over in that.
Yeah, this was during that period where Jerry Lawler was gone from the company, so you got Jim Ross and Paul Heyman on each pay-per-view, and it was great. Of course, this was September of 2001, so they were about 2 weeks removed from the 9/11 attacks, so there was a heavy American theme attached to this pay-per-view. They had Jennifer Holliday come in to sing America the Beautiful, and she really does love America. By the end of this, she was, like, screaming. It had gone from singing to screaming. It was like, I love America! I love America! And then she tried to start a USA chant. Like, this was over the top, America the Beautiful.
She loves America, loves her country.
Yeah, and there was no denying that. There was no gray area for Jennifer Holliday's patriotism.
Well, this is a post-9/11 Jennifer Holliday.
Yeah. Do you know who Jennifer Holliday is?
No idea.
I don't either.
Is she like Billie Holiday's niece?
No. As soon as they introduced her, I was just completely drawing a blank, but I didn't exactly have the motivation to Google her. So, if anyone wants to tell her.
I didn't want to talk about her.
Okay. Well, it was a big part. Her screaming made me write down notes. Then we go to a series of still photos to officially open up the pay-per-view. And it was all just photos chronicling your top matches, specifically Steve Austin and Kurt Angle in the main event tonight. Tons of blood in the lead up for this match. Mm. And they showed an angle where Kurt Angle was pile driven onto the cement floor and taken away in a neck collar onto a stretcher.
Yes.
This was in like a week before the match.
This was a week ago.
Angle, I noted, had a bloody face in every single still shot they showed over the weeks. This was a completely different company in 2001.
True.
They announced there will be 7 title matches tonight, Way. It's like an unofficial Night of Champions.
It really is. It really is. How many titles are up for grabs at Night of Champions? Not even 7.
Definitely not 7. There's singles matches on that card where when I was watching it, I was like, this is not for a title.
How many titles are in the WWF right now? Or WWE? You have two world titles,
the 2 secondary titles, the tag titles, the 2 Divas titles, which they unified. And is
so
that it?
6.
Yeah, 6.
So not even 7.
No, not at their height when you had like the European title, the hardcore title, all the WCW titles.
This was definitely the peak of the title situation. Titles.
Ross says it will be one of the most emotional nights in WWF history. And we go into our opening tag team bout for the WCW tag titles. It's a 4-way elimination match. The Dudley Boys defending against the Hardy Boys, against Lance Storm and the Hurricane, and the team I have completely forgotten about, the Big Show and Spike Dudley. Their gimmick being one's big and one's small, I guess.
Haven't they done that a lot with the Big Show?
As you go throughout history, Big Show has been just the utility player in the WWE, where if there's an opening, they just throw Big Show in there.
We need a big guy.
Like, he just does everything. Random makeshift tag teams, world champion, ridiculous comedy.
Boobies.
Just does everything. He does everything.
Oh, that trailer, by the way. Oh, my God.
Horrible. Fuck. Just a horrible movie.
I felt sick watching it.
Big Show felt sick in that last scene.
Oh, my God. I thought this would be a good idea just because it's something different, and at least it would be something I could watch and laugh at.
No, but I will not watch that.
It doesn't even... It looks so awful. It looks like Ready to Rumble awful, and not in a good way.
Not at all.
I wanted to vomit watching Ready to Rumble, and I want to vomit watching this trailer.
There will be no knucklehead review, everybody, so don't even ask. This is, of course, an elimination match. They mentioned that Helms is the European champion. Matt Hardy, my goodness, he is his look back here, significantly different from his current incarnation.
People age.
Yep. Jeff was wearing a baseball hat during the beginning part of this match.
Okay.
And did you notice the referee, Way?
No.
Teddy Long.
Ah.
Your SmackDown general manager.
All right.
Just a lowly referee at this time in 2001. Ross, in a line that had to have been told to him in his ear and one that he must have cringed saying, said that tonight the battle for sports entertainment superiority continues.
Sure. That was accurate.
I didn't know really what was on the line in terms of superiority tonight.
The titles. We want to bring the world championship back to the WWF. That's what they wanted.
Okay. Storm and Hurricane early on get the heat on Spike Dudley. Lance does this great spot where he rubs Spike's face right into the mat. Hurricane puts on his cape for a top rope crossbody that Heyman states is the second most deadliest move in sports entertainment, next to the spin-a-rooney. Mm-hmm. Then we see a big spot as the Big Show comes into the ring. Spike is standing on his shoulders and jumps to the floor on everyone, and then the Big Show teases a high spot from the top, but is cut off by Bubba Ray. This crowd very much into this opening match. Very
yes,
hot
they
crowd.
Were. Yes, they were.
And Pittsburgh is notoriously a very quiet city.
Oh, yeah. They really wanted to see that Big Show dive off of the top turnbuckle, but sadly they weren't going to see it. Hurricane Helms here was just debuted his Hurricane character not too long ago, and it was really starting to get over by this point. And I would say, aside from the Hardys, maybe the most over guy in this match, at least in the beginning of the match.
Yeah, they did some funny comedy spots with Hurricane. He teased choke-slamming Big Show, but then Lance springboarded into the ring, and he took a choke-slam from Big Show and was pinned, so they're eliminated. Then we saw a sequence with Spike and Matt trading near falls and reversals and ended with a twist of fate by Matt to eliminate Spike. So it's down to the Dudleys and the Hardys. The Dudleys isolated Jeff. They were making frequent tags. And then Jeff makes a comeback with the Whisper in the Wind. Matt gets the hot tag. Then we see a moonsault by Matt to the Dudleys on the floor. In the ring, the Dudleys then hit the 3D on Matt. Jeff makes the save with a swanton, but Matt takes a Baldo bomb while the ref is distracted with Jeff, and Devon gets the pin. So the Dudleys retain the WCW tag titles.
The Bubba bomb, not the Baldo bomb.
Oh, shit. I've mixed up my bombs. The Baldo bomb, of course. Intellectual property of one Prince Albert.
Correct.
The Bubba bomb, everybody. So Devon and Bubba Ray retain the WCW tag titles. Very strong opening match.
No, they have the WWF tag
titles. No. This was WCW.
No. Don't.
Taker and Kane. They had the WWF.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to look up that box cover because I remember checking the box cover and reading that Taker and Kane had the WCW titles.
Okay, well, this is important.
Okay, do it. John Pollock, everybody, is going off to his desk and picking up his VHS copy of Unforgiven, which he did not label himself. This was an actual VHS copy that he either purchased, I hope not, but either he purchased or received for free from some prize giver. As usual, John Pollock is usually wrong about most things on this podcast, and I have all the faith in the world that he'll be wrong again. And if he is, I welcome all of you, members of the Review Away Facebook group, to give him hell. Do it with your photoshopping, with your, music collaging, whatever you guys like to do. Tell John Pollock how wrong he is, because he is usually wrong maybe once per recording. And here he comes, about on his way to return. What is the verdict?
You're right. I even looked up on Wikipedia. I could have sworn this was a mistake. If someone went to the trouble of why, I could almost swear that the graphic was the WCW tag titles for this match.
No. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
The WWF tag titles successfully defended by the Dudley Boys.
Just don't even bother next time. If I say something is so...
You've been on a roll of late with these facts.
I really have.
Facts.
Well, it's like a 26-year roll.
Wow, humble. Rob Van Dam is arriving backstage and is greeted by Stephanie McMahon, who offers Rob her services for any help he needs against Chris Jericho tonight and insinuates she will do anything. And then Rob asks for a locker room big enough to hold his superstar status. Horrible acting that actually made Stephanie look like the superior.
So awful.
Rob is really bad in terms of these, especially where he's given lines.
Yeah. I guess this was his character at the time. It was just supposed to be this guy who's really cocky, full of himself, and but like in a fun way where you'd be able to cheer him. But the exchange was just so awkward. Super, super awkward between these two. Stephanie had this weird, she looked like a teenager that just came from a slumber party. Like, she had these, curly things on her hair. Like, what do you call that?
Yeah, her hair, like rollers?
I don't know, like hot iron curly things on her hair, and she looked terrible.
We then go to ringside, and Kurt Angle's family is in the front row, and Michael Cole interviews Angle's mom, Jackie, and his brother, Dave Angle. Was Dave Angle the one in the...
Eric was the one.
Eric was the one in the DVD. The one that looked really, like, sick.
Like the bald one? Eric was the one with the developmental deal. I don't know.
Yeah, he was the one with the developmental deal, but then we reviewed that DVD. I think it was Eric, who looked like he had lost like 100 pounds since we had last seen him.
I don't remember.
Anyway, Michael Cole, you want to talk about bad hair. This guy had frosted tips on his hair. Jesus Christ.
Solid.
He looked like he was in high school himself with Stephanie.
He also looked much skinnier, like much slimmer.
Oh,
than
he's
he does
put
now.
On a lot of weight.
And I know he works out. Like, I've heard him talk about working out before on like that Howard Stern podcast he used to do with Taz. He does work out. So I don't know if he's actually gained muscle mass or if he's just fat over the years.
It's not muscle mass, way. Look at him.
Oh, it's,
you can see in the face.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's just, he's put on weight.
Okay.
Then they replay the injury angle from SmackDown. This was, I believe, 10 days prior to this pay-per-view where he took a pile driver onto the cement floor with the storyline going in that his neck is not at 100%, just as it wasn't before the 1996 Olympics.
Yes.
Poetry.
They've done this so many times with Kurt Angle, haven't they? Where they work the neck injury into a match.
Yep. My tape fucked up at this point, Way. Because then an edition of WWF Metal came on because we had Raven against Perry Saturn that apparently was on the pay-per-view. Raven was accompanied by Terry Runnels wearing a very non-PG shirt. This match came about after Raven and Terry put Moppy, does everyone remember Moppy, through a wood chipper, and then Saturn took a DDT from Raven and the match was confirmed on Access the night before this pay-per-view. On Excess, which is what this match was on this paper.
They wasted the Moppy feud on Excess. There was a lot of build in this Moppy deal.
Yep, they put it right through a wood chipper, which, if I'm not mistaken, whatever happened with Chavo Guerrero's Pepe?
Pepe.
Did Jericho not destroy it or something like that?
I don't remember.
I just revert back to you now for these...
I do not remember.
...odd comments and facts.
Well, not the Wikipedia. We're being distracted here by TNA.
Yeah, we're encoding their current promo, everyone. RVD and Abyss, Monsters Ball.
Are you allowed to mention these matches? Are you sure they're not giving away
Yeah, we're supposed to be airing this ASAP. What else do we got up for Bound for Glory?
Because last time... Anyway.
Let's keep going.
Yes.
Before we get into a legal problem. So that brings us here to this match. Heyman brings up Raven starting the flock, and as he's talking about this, he goes, "Yeah, I know, Jim, you never watch Nitro."
And then Jim Ross says, "I was busy on Mondays."
Great line.
Yeah.
We see a drop toe hold by Raven into the steel steps. Raven then applies the Cobra Clutch in the middle of the ring. Saturn catapults Raven into the turnbuckle and then hits a fisherman suplex, and that's the match. He gets the win. And Saturn was opened up hard way under the left eye and was bleeding here.
Yeah.
Which would be a frequent injury throughout the night.
This was an okay match, but the storyline was completely meaningless in the context of this match. It's like they just went out there and had a regular match with nothing to do with the storyline. I mean, as stupid as the storyline was, it's like they were trying to come up with a way to make you want to see this match, but they did it in a completely separate way from the match itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't seem like a single product. It's like, it's clearly these writers are giving these two men a stupid storyline. Now these two just have to go out there and do what they're basically hired for, and that is to wrestle, not act. I didn't take this match seriously because the build was so stupid and nothing. This is a meaningless match. They could have had the best match in the world and I wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of Saturn's character during this time where he was just playing this goofball. I just didn't think it worked at all.
It's just so different from his in-ring style, and his in-ring style is that of somebody who's like just a badass, you know? Like, he had a very rough, stiff looking offense. And his character was just stupid.
Yeah, I've always hated that when they'll have guys where their in-ring work completely contradicts their character.
Yeah.
Like, at least with Eugene, they didn't have him go out there and wrestle the same matches he was doing in OVW. He played his character when he was doing his matches. And at least that works. Whereas, you know, for someone like John Morrison or AJ Styles, when they were trying to push those guys as solid heels, and then they'd work such a babyface style. Yeah. I just hate that when it's like you want one reaction in a certain context and another reaction when they're in the ring.
Yeah, it's like it seems like wrestlers or even booking agents just forget that these are characters that need to be
there needs to be consistency
throughout their promos and their in-ring work.
Lillian Garcia's with Christian backstage, and he says that tonight people won't care about Kurt Angle winning the WWF title, but instead they're here to see Christian defeat his brother for the Intercontinental Championship. And we get a video reviewing the Edge and Christian feud, which had been teased all summer long and then led up to a Raw taping in Toronto where Christian officially turned on Edge and dropped the Stanley Cup-shaped King of the Ring trophy onto his ribs. Which I was at that show.
You were, yes, at the Raw. What was on that trophy? Was it the names of all the winners?
I think it just had, like, you know, 2001 King of the Ring winner, and probably had a nameplate maybe for Edge. I can't remember exactly.
Because if it was like the Stanley Cup,
where they had all the names.
Well, I vaguely remember there being like nameplates all over the statue. I guess that was wrong.
That leads us to our singles match with Edge and Christian. Edge defending the Intercontinental Championship. This was when Edge had his Rob Zombie theme for the upcoming album, The Sinister Surge.
All right. And Christian had his Bohemian Rhapsody theme song, which I loved.
At last, he's on his way.
Yes.
There was brawling early on the entrance ramp. Christian got catapulted into a pillar at the entrance, and apparently there are no countouts in this match because they spent 8,000 minutes on the outside here before they got into the ring. Christian yelled at one point and called him a son of a bitch, which, we talk about consistency, these two are supposed to be brothers.
Maybe he hates his mom.
Maybe he does. Maybe, I don't know. Crowd was significantly pulling this match down, in my opinion. They were very quiet for this.
Yeah, but the build for this match wasn't nearly what
it was. It was very sudden. I mean, this had like 2-3 weeks of build behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Edge is cut under his left eye, just like Saturn was.
He was cut after he tried to execute. He did execute a German suplex on Christian, and I guess Christian landed on him awkwardly. It's an awkward move for Edge, a guy who's so tall.
I thought it made for a good comeback for Edge. If you're going to have someone hard way, you'd prefer it be the babyface.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Edge is under the ring at one point. The camera zooms out for a wide shot, pretty much telegraphing that he's coming out the opposite side, which is what he did. Climb to the top rope, and Christian takes a crossbody for a two, and the crowd pops for that.
That looks stupid, though. Like, climbing underneath the ring to climb up to the other side. It's like
how much energy that's taking, what, to just outsmart this bumbling fool who has his back towards you.
It's like something. It's like a hornswoggle move.
Yeah, well, we saw John Morrison do the same thing on Sheamus on Monday.
Oh.
Remember climbing onto the Titantron? Christian then grabs two chairs and teases a concerto, but Edge sweeps Christian's leg before hitting him in the head, and Ross notes the referee would have disqualified Christian if he had hit the move. The referee then pulls the chair from Edge's hands when he attempts his own concerto, and Edge ends up taking a low blow with the ref distracted, and Christian gets the pinfall. I did not like the finish at all. This was like the referee pretty much led to the finish here. Thought it was somewhat weak. Christian is your new Intercontinental Champion, and these two had been teaming for almost 2.5 years at this point. So the singles match, you had very high expectations for, and this was I didn't like the finish for it.
Yeah, this was very unsatisfying. This whole storyline just seemed very unsatisfying.
You thought these two were going to have such a lengthy program after teaming together, but the very next month after this pay-per-view, they did the blow-off in a ladder match.
Yeah, well, think about all the previous brother versus brother feuds. I mean, like, compare this to Brett versus Owen, and that lasted like a whole year. This was a matter of months. Plus, it got so lost amongst all the entire invasion thing. And eventually they had Christian join the alliance as well, which made no sense. It's just simply because he's
This was the part where it really got watered down as they got towards the end of the invasion. It was like everyone was switching back and forth. It was so you didn't care anymore about who was on which side. Then we go to a video of Steven Richards introducing Chronic, stating that after The Undertaker and Kane disbanded Right to Censor, he was going to gain his revenge by bringing Chronic to your airwaves.
How does that make sense? If you're a part of the Right to Censor, you want to censor everything. You want to censor any drug references, including Chronic.
Well, it might have been. Maybe he was just. It was such a change of heart because of After what? Right to Censor failed, maybe he thought, well, in moderation. Chronic is okay.
He turned to drugs. He started smoking dope.
Could have. He was all in black now, so he's turned to the dark side.
Oh, fuck.
This build-up also included Bryan Adams kicking over Undertaker's motorcycle with the storyline that Kane was in the hospital at the time.
See, I was at that show. It was the SmackDown in Toronto where Chronic debuted.
Yes. It was a complete silence for their return. Jonathan Coachman is with The Undertaker and Kane backstage and asks them about Chronic costing them the WWF tag titles.
Yes.
As they now hold the WCW tag titles.
What?
They were champions at the time.
Chronic?
Undertaker and Kane were.
Okay.
So
yes,
they had
yes.
both sets of belts, and they were defending one of the belts.
Oh, you mean at the time? Yes.
Yeah, they had both sets.
Okay.
They had unified them, and then they got to choose. We're only putting these tag titles on the line. The others were holding on to.
Oh, my God. What a mess. What a mess.
Even though they lost, they still were tag champions.
God bless anybody who tries to assemble these title histories. God bless you for rummaging through this fucking invasion storyline, trying to sort out who's supposed to be champions and who won what.
Only in this period. Oh. This is probably the answer to a unique trivia question. Which team lost the tag titles and remained the champions after a match?
Oh my God.
It's incredible. Undertaker referred to Chronic as, quote, muscled up statues and will drop them in the sand. And then, in a line that you would never expect to come out of the mouth of the Undertaker, the Undertaker, the dead man, he says, let's roll, bro.
I wrote down the exact same thing. It's just, especially watching back now, the Undertaker, I mean, he's rebuilt the mystique of his character. Just to see him in this phase as some
biker.
Some redneck biker. So weird. It's like something out of the, like a thug from Women of Wrestling. Let's roll, bro. The Kane.
That leads us to The Undertaker and Kane versus Chronic for the WCW tag titles. Fuck, I had it right here.
Oh, well.
In the first one, I had both matches for the WCW tag titles. Christ.
Who cares?
Brian Clark, hands down the Scott Putski Award winner on this show. Holy Christ. Mm. Like, just insane. Bryan Adams still sporting a mullet in 2001. All of them fight on the floor to start. Adams and Kane, very, very slow. This I equated to like the beat in a video game where you've just created a character and he has no moves other than the basic ones. That was Kane and Bryan Adams
perfect.
In this match.
Clark, you probably would have put, a couple of kickboxing moves in there because all he did was just a bunch of stupid looking kicks that looked like beginner's taekwondo lesson style.
Based on how slow this match was, I was really hoping Undertaker would hit special and end this match very quickly with a finish.
No.
Clark tried to show some agility with a reverse heel kick in the corner to Kane. A terribly looking shoulder breaker spot by Kane to Clark. Then we see an armbar by the Undertaker, but Adams breaks the hold. Heyman actually compared Chronic to Ole and Gene Anderson and the Briscoe brothers in their efforts to cut off the ring. Kane then got tired throughout some of the spots of this match, and you could definitely see this. Chronic teases a double choke slam onto Taker, but Kane comes off the top rope with a clothesline.
By the way, everyone's finish in this match is the choke slam.
Yeah, they had identical finishes. And Taker then hit the choke slam onto Brian Clark for the win. This was the worst match on the show. That being said, maybe it's just because of what we've watched in the last year, but this is not in my category of the worst matches we have reviewed on this show.
Oh, yes.
I remember this match being a lot worse than it actually was watching it today. Maybe it's because I think the level of that we see on a weekly basis from like the Divas or people on NXT has really lowered my expectations. But this was at this time, and I don't mean to cut you off, but in 2001, the work rate was probably the highest it's ever been in the WWE.
Exactly what I was going to say. Even on this card itself, I mean, you would go on to see some pretty good matches. And this was the time with, Benoit, Jericho, Rey Mysterio, Edge. So
they had increased everyone's kind of standards for quality pay-per-view matches. That
yeah.
Today, this match could probably go on pay-per-view and it wouldn't get the criticism. But in 2001, this really stunk it
yeah.
up.
Yeah, and I mean, say what you will about Chronic, but they did bring them in. They probably paid them, you know, a decent salary coming in as this kind of well-known team from WCW. And you kill the feud, you kill their heat in one match.
That was the thing. Like, they never use them again after this pay-per-view, citing this performance. But really, they were... What would you do after they lose clean here? They were just murdered here in this match.
Their strength in WCW was that they would always squash the smaller... the other smaller teams. And here, in your first feud, you put them against Undertaker and Kane. Pretty much a team that... no one will ever beat clean.
Yeah. Richards is then in the ring, and he faces Kane. He begs for forgiveness, and he takes a choke slam from Kane. Then we go backstage. Booker T is with Shane McMahon in the locker room, and Taz walks in discussing bringing the WCW title home and mentions how Stephanie McMahon pinned The Rock, and it would be sad if these two couldn't beat him. I vaguely remember this, where Stephanie McMahon pinned The Rock on television.
I don't remember.
Retarded.
When was that? Was that during this whole feud?
I imagine it must have been briefly before this, but just mind-blowing that they booked that. Then we go to Stephanie backstage, and she asks Jonathan Coachman where RVD is, and he replies, he's in dressing room number 5. So she walks down to dressing room number 5. The door is open ajar, and she just begins talking loudly. And she says it's her birthday tomorrow. And she wants Rob Van Dam to destroy Jericho, and that if he wins, his experience in the Alliance will be a very pleasurable one. If you haven't clued in, Stephanie McMahon's gimmick was she was a slut at this point in time, mm-hmm. who fucked guys to win matches. Jericho then walks up from behind, and Stephanie says she will be 25 years old tomorrow, and Jericho implies exactly what I said, and said that she has big boobs and wishes her the best of luck. Such a different character Chris Jericho is today than he was back then.
Yeah, even Jericho in this Stephanie skit was tough to watch. It was embarrassing watching some of this stuff. This is like another one of those skits where you try to sit down and watch professional wrestling with somebody who doesn't watch wrestling, and this comes
on. This is the shit you watch.
How do you explain this?
I'm sorry,
Dad. Best of luck.
The best of luck. Like, man, grade 5 here.
Oh,
So up next, we have Rob Van Dam versus Chris Jericho. I only realized this was the hardcore title match when Rob Van Dam walked out with this title on his shoulder. Highlight of the pay-per-view, highlight for weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the match. I'm talking about the immediate sign in the audience they cut to, where it said Mr. Pay-Per-View with view spelled V-E-I-W in giant block letters.
Idiot.
And they cut to this sign. Just awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Early on, we get a fish out of water spot to start with both ending it by going for a drop kick. We got dueling chants of RVD and Y2J. Then Jericho slaps RVD in the face, and they showed a replay of this in slow motion.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Did it look impressive?
It was. He literally just slapped the shit out of him. The two were, I thought, a little off when it came to timing and, mm-hmm. and trying to be fluid with their moves. I mean, Van Dam, for all the accolades he gets, very athletic, very flexible, but not the most fluid guy to work with in the world.
And you know what? It's tough for me to say this, but...
It's like he's out there doing moves rather than working a match together, which I think is more Jericho's strength.
Well, I was going to say, it's tough for me to say this because Jericho was the star of this, not just this match, but in my opinion, the one of the top performers of this pay-per-view, aside from the main event. But even to me, like he's still a little, especially when you compare him to an Eddie or to Angle or to Benoit, he's still a little bit sloppy from time to time. And that's just my opinion. It might be a little controversial, but a little sloppy from both guys to start.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Van Dam went for a plancha over the top and then went for a pin on the floor. Sorry, that's when I realized it was a hardcore title match, was when they brought it up here. I was like, why is he pinning him on the floor? Van Dam then missed a twisting leg drop in midair to the barricade, which just looked tremendously pleasant to take. Jericho pulled out a ladder, and we see a vertical suplex by Van Dam onto the ladder. And JR asks, how do you learn how to fall kidney first onto a ladder for the Yahoos at home? The Yahoos. Ross acknowledges the babyface reaction that RVD is receiving. This whole time, the crowd was really wanting to turn RVD. Mm-hmm. We see a split-legged moonsault by Van Dam, but Jericho gets his knees up. Jericho then takes a kick to the face, and Jericho's right eye is busted open. That's the third one of the night. And then takes a drop toe hold into the ladder.
Yeah, RVD was known for potatoing guys a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Especially during this time.
Yeah, he was pretty well known backstage, to the point that there was even a match around this time where the word going around was that on this pay-per-view, not this pay-per-view, but I think one coming up after, that they were going to all give receipts to RVD
way
he'd been working with them. Jericho then dropped to the floor, and Van Dam goes for a suicide dive and takes a chair. Thankfully, he gets his hands up here.
Yeah, they're working a lot of the spots from the Benoit Jericho ladder match from Royal Rumble earlier that year,
yep.
Including the walls of Jericho on top of the ladder, which always looks really cool.
And Van Dam dropped to the floor after taking that.
Mm.
It was very awkward looking, the fall, and then back in the ring, Van Dam goes for a pin attempt. Jericho transitions into a Fujiwara armbar, and then they roll to the outside. Jericho throws Van Dam shoulder first into the steel steps. Good match at this point. Then Stephanie runs down, gets onto the apron. Jericho, like, full out swings a chair at her head,
mm-hmm.
and Stephanie ducks to the floor, and then Jericho walks into a Van Daminator and a frog splash. Van Dam gets the win. Jim Ross calls it a 5-star match. I wouldn't be quite that generous.
No.
I hated the finish. I just you enjoy a match. You like put 15 minutes of your time into it, and you get a fucking run-in finish like that. I just hate it.
Yeah. It always
didn't ruin the match, but at the same time,
it takes away.
Is that the most clever finish you can book?
Yeah. It takes away from the purity of the match.
Yes.
But I thought RVD was good in this. I thought Jericho was great in this, and the way he carried all the spots, and the way he even the way he swung at Stephanie, looking so real.
He swung at her.
Yeah.
Had she not been on the ball, she was getting a birthday.
Yeah.
She was getting a birthday present in the form of a chair to the head. We go backstage. Booker is practicing, saying six-time WCW champion, and that Shane comes in and says the main goal is to bring the title back to the Alliance, and it doesn't matter if he wins or if Booker wins. Then Booker leaves, and Shane starts picturing himself being the WCW champion and says, first time. So get ready, everyone, for your comedy challenges coming up here for the WCW title. We've got The Rock versus Booker T and Shane McMahon for the WCW title. One of these three didn't belong in this match.
Well, earlier they had a match at SummerSlam with just Booker T and The Rock, and now
got to make it fresh. Got to add something enticing to it.
Let's make it a handicap.
Would this not turn off more people than add interest?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like, how can I take this seriously? How can I believe that? Well, I guess I could believe that Booker T could win the title in this situation, but
like their thinking at the time was Rock beat Booker clean at SummerSlam. How can you come back with a rematch? And there's so many ways you could come up with different ways.
How about building Booker T to make him look like somebody who
is not a joke.
Yeah.
Anyway, Jim Ross got in a little shot here at WCW stating that Booker T has never been in an environment like SummerSlam before during the video package. And did you notice the music they used for this video package?
No.
It was Rey Mysterio and Dean Malenko's old WCW theme music.
Really?
Kind of the stressed out theme.
They both had the same theme music?
They both used it at different points in time.
Oh.
This video package for this build-up, everyone, listen to everything Wade just said about building up Booker and making him serious. This video package featured a Booker T midget. It featured Big Show impersonating Booker. I didn't know why I would want to watch this.
And it had Booker T beating up Tajiri.
Yes. No, great heat. Ross and Heyman, for whatever reason, start discussing Ric Flair during the beginning of this match. And Heyman says that Arn Anderson told him that Flair idolizes Booker T. And this was a number of months before Ric Flair came into the company. So I found it interesting they were so openly talking about him. Hmm. Rock's entrance, probably the biggest pop of the night thus far. It looks so silly here, seeing Booker selling and having to reach for Shane for help to tag out. Shane just looked like a complete non-athlete in here with these two. And I know there are people online who just think Shane McMahon is God's gift to pro wrestling and had the greatest matches ever. I am not in that group. No. I think this guy, every single match he had, he was given such just an open canvas to do whatever you want in any of these matches. And I guarantee if you took 98% of the roster who were allowed to use any chairs, any tables, blood, glass,
falling off of tall shit,
they'd get the same reaction. Shane was given every shortcut in the book. I never felt he added to stuff, and I will maintain that Randy Orton was so hot last year, and Shane McMahon was a fucking ice cube.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a big fan of Shane McMahon.
He just reminds me of a backyard wrestler who is able to dive off of shit really well.
Like, doesn't have a body, had no cardio.
No.
Like, these guys, it's just such a slap in the face. If his quarter hours did gigantic gains or he added significant buys to pay-per-view, he added nothing. Nothing at all. Like, there was no upside to Shane McMahon, and he got himself into these just cherry-picked matches where he could do anything he wanted, and just, he would bump for these guys great, but it just pulled other guys down, in my opinion.
I would love to see Shane McMahon in the UFC. Imagine if, like, Shane was, like, Dana's son, and then, like,
Shane White.
Shane wanted to put himself on the card. And then he'd be put up against Chuck Liddell in a handicap match.
Did you see our listener Matt's new tattoo?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you got to go check it. He posted it on my wall.
And what is the tattoo?
He's got a tattoo of Dana White he just got on his bicep.
Wow.
And then he has other pictures on his profile of other tattoos he's got. He's got a Ted DiBiase picture on his leg.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a Rated R Superstar logo, a Bret Hart logo, and the best one, on his forearm, he's got a giant TNA logo.
No way.
Yeah. So go check it out. Matt. I can't remember his last name off the top of my head.
That's
here.
That's incredible.
But go check that out.
Wow.
How did we get off on this tangent? We see a flying clothesline off of the barricade by Shane to The Rock. Ross is disgusted at the interference by Shane, and Heyman defends, saying it's a handicap match. Then a knee drop by Booker, which leads to a spin-a-rooney that got a lot of boos. Shane then brings the title into the ring, but Rock ducks, and Shane hits Booker T and then lays out Rock. So Rock and Booker are both out, courtesy of Shane McMahon. Then Shane hits a kip-up and goes for the people's elbow, but Rock does his own kip-up, does a comeback with a rock bottom, and then a spinebuster to Booker and a people's elbow. But Test runs in to attack Rock with a big boot onto the floor. Bradshaw runs off Test with a pipe. Then Nick Patrick pulls up Rock, puts him into the ring, and a WWE referee goes down to get in Nick Patrick's face for his interference. Shane goes for the pin, but Mike Chioda pulls Shane McMahon out of the ring. The two refs then fight each other, and this leaves Booker and Rock in the ring alone. Rock counters the bookend and hits the rock bottom. This is the second match on the night where both guys have the same finish. And Earl Hebner runs in and counts three. Extremely overbooked.
God damn.
One man too many in this match.
Three referees, two run-ins.
This built to a Mike Chioda versus Nick Patrick match.
God damn it.
And Heyman asks after how many controversial title matches Earl Hebner wants to get involved in. This was not controversial. This was just a disappointment.
It was just stupid. Stupid from the
Rock and Booker beginning. Would have had multiple time better match if these two were just in there. And seeing The Rock sell for Shane McMahon is just unbelievable.
Crowd seemed hot, though, I will say.
They were hot for this match.
Yeah, but I personally was completely lost. I was very sleepy already during this match, and wow. Wow.
That was last week. William Regal and Tajiri are backstage, and Tori Wilson walks in and puts her arm around Tajiri and promises not to get involved in the match tonight, and Regal allows it. And I'm thinking, what fucking match? There's another one before the main event? And apparently there was. We go to WWF New York. Stacy Keibler is shown with a man's face and a close-up, and she says that he isn't the only one who has had a clean shave today. And they then go to a clip of Keebler in a bathtub shaving her legs with Sonny's old theme music playing. Mm-hmm. And this was a direct copy of an old Sonny video from the mid-90s that they just shot with Stacy Keebler.
Really?
Right down to the music.
Yes. On your non-PG rated edition of WWF programming, it was so weird seeing her on stage with men, women, and children cheering for this video of a woman shaving her legs. It just seems so odd.
Creepy would be the word.
Sure.
Up next, everyone, the U.S. title. Tajiri defending against Rhino. I had to look this up to see who was the champion going into this match.
I didn't even know until the end.
I didn't even know if the match was on the card. I was expecting Austin and Angle next. Heyman starts asking Ross how many wives he's had during the beginning of this match. Then they talk about interfactional relationships with Tajiri and Torrie Wilson breaking the code. Tajiri is selling throughout the match with Rhino overpowering him. Rhino chases after Torrie and she falls in the ring. This is right out of a cheesy horror movie. And then Rhino goes for the gore but is kicked in the head by Tajiri for a near fall. Then we see a tarantula by Tajiri who then sets up a kick to the downed Rhino who counters with a suplex and hits the gore. Rhino is your new U.S. champion. Just a throwaway title change.
Completely meaningless. Completely meaningless title change.
No one cared.
Didn't matter who was champion. Didn't matter who won the title. It was a nice little short match. Both guys I enjoyed watching, but just why
bad
even
placement, too, in between the two title matches.
Why even put this on the show? Who cares?
And that leads us to our main event, everybody. Steve Austin defending the WWF Championship against Kurt Angle. In the build-up to this match, away, we saw Angle toss Kurt Angle's medals into a river. The Don River, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Is that? Do you know exactly what bridge that was?
It was. I don't know which bridge, but it was into the Don River.
Oh, okay.
Then we saw Angle kidnap Austin and made Austin cry, which I had totally forgotten about, but just brutal.
It just lasted forever, those skits. I remember watching those shows, and like I remember being there for that SmackDown.
Was that where they did the crying?
Oh, you know what? No. On the Raw was when they did it. But I remember watching it at home and just thinking, how many of these videos do they have? And it would just suck so much to be in that live audience as you were, mm-hmm. just watching these videos one after the other.
I can't believe they booked Austin to cry. I don't care if he's a heel. It was just so stupid. It was like they were actively trying to just kill this guy. Huge pop when Kurt Angle is announced as being from Pittsburgh, and they begin fighting on the ramp right away. Angle is just a super aggressive babyface style. Austin would try and attack the neck of Angle. Austin then teased bailing, but Angle stopped him from leaving. Angle then tosses Austin off of the entrance ramp into the floor. We saw Austin tease a pile driver onto the concrete, but Angle hits a back body drop. And at this point, Austin, his right eye is busted open and is bleeding. So that's four on this pay-per-view. Angle goes for his own pile driver onto the concrete, but takes a back body drop himself. They work towards the German suplex spots where Angle hits three onto Austin and his repaired neck. Angle then goes for a moonsault, but is stopped by Austin. And then Angle hits a low blow. Then eventually hits a stunner onto Austin. The straps come down, but Austin counters the Angle slam with a back suplex for a near fall. They build up with Austin hitting a pile driver, and they really built to that spot a lot with Angle then kicking out to a really, really big pop. Austin goes for the stunner, but Angle catches him and applies the ankle lock. Austin grabs the edge of the apron, but then taps out. So that sets up your rematch, which they would do in about 2 weeks. But Austin drops the title to Angle, who gets the big hometown pop. The whole Angle family, including Karen, get into the ring. They hold up Kurt Angle with the WWF title. This part was hilarious because you could see a little kid climb over the barricade, and security sent them back into the crowd and wouldn't let them into the ring. But this was a cool spot. They really put over Kurt Angle huge here.
Yeah, the whole 9/11 thing I'm sure played a part as well.
Absolutely. I don't think they were planning to have a title change, and that probably changed things a lot. This match I thought was great. These two had some of the best chemistry in WWF history. These two had an even better match, I thought, the previous month at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And Angle, at this point, had only been wrestling like 2 years and change.
Which is incredible.
He mastered working as a heel, and then this was the first time they flipped him to working as a babyface, and was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Just stuff that you can't teach a guy in this time. Mm-hmm. He just took to so easily, mm-hmm. and I could watch these two every week.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic match, I thought, and it built to the rematch. And they really put him over by bringing... They brought out the whole babyface locker room. Yes, you had, Taka Michinoku out there, but you also had Kane, The Undertaker, and The Rock, mm-hmm. who they generally don't include guys of that stature for True. Angles like this to be just another guy in the ring.
Absolutely.
It really made Kurt a top star and made me even more mad knowing that, less than a month later, they turned him heel.
Did they...
They turned him.
Well, they turned him heel to tease, and then he would turn on the Alliance to go back to the WWF.
But then he was okay. If you want to document this, he ended up turning heel a month later. Joined the Alliance for the Survivor Series. Then they tried to make it seem that he was working for WWF all along.
Yeah.
And screwed over the Alliance. But the next night, he was back to being a heel. This was all in 24 hours after Survivor Series. He was a heel following Survivor Series. But they tried to make him a babyface coming out of there. It was terrible, dude.
Weird.
Just horrible booking of his character when you had this as the setup. Okay. But generally, these 2001 WWF shows, you can really criticize the booking, but you really can't criticize the in-ring stuff too much unless you're chronic. I give this one a 7 out of 10.
I give it a 5 out of 10. I thought it was an alright show. The build was shit, as you mentioned. And I would not have bought this show, and I did not buy this show. But there are some good matches.
Absolutely. So, we'll get into your feedback right now before we preview our contest for next week that we're going to do. We'll start off with Brian Lindbergh, who writes, "Okay, I might get laughed at, but I will admit that I was a fan of WOW. I happened to stumble upon it on the new VR with a group of friends, and we had a blast ripping it to pieces. From the campy gimmicks such as Jungle Girl, Green Workers, to stuff like Jane Blonde not shaving her armpits before TV, each week was a new source of endless mirth. Also, there were a few of the women I actually thought were better than some of the female talent employed by the bigger companies at the time. Riot was my favorite, as I thought she had a good gimmick and moveset, although her power bombs were about 50-50 for being good. Looks like that pay-per-view had a month's share of bad ones, though. On the topic of the Jericho and Kid move off the second rope, if it were anyone other than Jericho, then I'd have to agree with you, John. However, Jericho is nothing but professional, and I'd trust him to do even the stupidest stunts safely, or refuse."
I don't disagree with him about his comment about some of the WOW girls being better than some of the girls in the WWF or definitely WCW at the time.
Well, especially in 2001 at the time, you weren't exactly talking about the standard being too high on diva matches.
Yeah, but even comparing it to the WWE locker room right now, at least in terms of promos, there were some good girls in the WOW stable. Mike Still: "Forget Impact, forget the repetitive, predictable Jersey Shore. Even forget Raw if you want. I really want to hear your thoughts on the greatest clusterfuck on TV today, that is NXT. It's hard to imagine a weekly wrestling show that could be worse than Wrestlelicious, but WWE Creative really needs to give that show a look, because at least they book the girls to their strengths. I will never understand why this company has a show that intentionally books their own talent to look like unimportant idiots in favor of embarrassing the announcers and shooting on the internet. A very worthy guilty pleasure."
Yeah, that's pretty much what NXT is. They're completely open about it now that this show sucks.
Yeah.
And these girls are terrible. I feel bad enough for just the women here who are just, they look like idiots on this show and are just...
I actually want to watch this show. I've only seen the first episode, but now I actually want to see how they're doing it, because it's almost like they're catering to fans like you and I, who look sometimes for the bad in wrestling and just laugh at it. They're really just catering to that demographic, and I want to see what they come up with.
Alex Watts asks, "Where is Val Venus? He has not been on Impact since February. He never signed a contract with TNA, and he just he left the company. They mutually agreed that they would not be bringing him on, and he, I believe, has been working a bit in Mexico."
Okay. Michael Howard Jr.: "The only thing I love more than pro wrestling is the NFL. I wanted to hear up I wanted to clear up a couple of things concerning Chad Johnson. I am in no way defending him, just stating the facts. Number one, child please is his catchphrase that he uses whenever he is in disbelief at someone's inability to judge his greatness. He has made it famous through VH1, Twitter, and his appearances on ESPN2's First Take. Number two, he wasn't trying to be a heel. That is just his character all the time. He kind of plays a lovable jerk to the press and on his show. Having the unfortunate privilege of seeing so much of him over the past 5 years, I wasn't surprised by his delivery and thought it came off rather natural. Okay, cool.
If you're familiar with him, sure, but I mean, a large part of that wrestling audience has probably never heard this guy in his life.
Yeah,
well, they booed him on that show.
Are you sure they were booing or were they saying...
I heard that person who wrote that about if they're...
Woo something.
It sounded pretty distinct that they were very annoyed.
That's fine. I mean, I do not follow
the NFL in the least.
Yeah, so. I mean, we're Canadian, sorry.
Yeah, and we don't follow CFL either. Chris Stevens, hey, I bought a Fossil watch about 5 years ago. It cost me $120 and heard that Pauly hooked up with Snooki last year when the show ended. I heard him say it was on some Spring Break Jersey Shore special.
Okay. So, Pauly D with,
Snooki.
Yeah, anyway. Jermone Jackson. I was thinking back to your review of Great American Bash 2000, particularly the Sting Vampiro Human Torch match. I was at the Monday Nitro the night after the pay-per-view, and Sting and Vampiro had a match on the show. Sting looked good for someone that got burned alive the night before.
Jesus Christ. Awesome, this company. The best one I ever did, I ever saw was I went to that WCW Mayhem pay-per-view at the Air Canada Center,
yeah,
where Kurt Hennig lost a retirement match that night, and the next night he came back.
Great.
Just great WCW booking, everybody.
Trick me.
Max Moon, I would love to hear John Pollock and Wei Ting do wrestling commentary. John could do the play-by-play, and Wei could do the color. Both of you guys really work well off of each other, and there's already a chemistry there reminiscent of Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon. There are a lot of great ways you could go about it, and one is if you did a video edition of Review Away where you dub over the announcers of a terrible pay-per-view with your own sarcastic commentary. The Women of Wrestling pay-per-view would have been perfect for this.
Well,
that would be a big step technological-wise for us to do, and I will say that me and Way have attempted this.
We have tried it, yes. We tried it for the Fight Network. We got some indie wrestling show that we tried to commentate over, and it just...
We were less than impressed with the results.
You know what? John is very good. John, like, I think you're good at it. Like, you're very witty, and I don't know, you're just good at it. Me, like, I can't do it. It's like, it's just not my style, and I think I get lost.
We'll see, folks. I don't know about the commentary idea, but we'll keep that that idea. Sorry, here's his next, Craig.
Craig Schlanger. In case this wasn't already mentioned, last week you noted how awkward it was for the Raw is Owen episode to have been placed. Yes, it has been mentioned. It's the SmackDown. He's just saying, yeah, the SmackDown 9/11 episode is the one of the best episodes that they claim.
Nate Milton, great anniversary show, gentlemen. On behalf of the Raw Nation, thank you. As far as LL Cool J's current relevance goes, I think Pollock is giving Uncle L's acting career the short shrift. He's essentially been a bargain basement version of Will Smith in terms of making the jump from hip-hop to mainstream entertainment, and that is a compliment since Will Smith has done better than 95% of musicians and athletes who enter the acting world. He's been an integral part of some classic flicks such as Crush Groove, Wildcat, SWAT, and Any Given Sunday. He had a sitcom on NBC that ran for several years, and he currently is one of the stars on NCIS LA. Not my cup of tea, but Middle America seems to like it. I would say he's one of the few artists who was big in the 80s that's still marketable today.
Andy Simpson? Nice. A Queen song off the top. 1 Year of Love is a seldomly played song, and as a Queen fan, hearing it made my day. Thanks, guys. Well, you should thank John Pollock for that.
I found that one, and I thought it fit in well. Did you hear that they are doing a biopic film on Queen?
Really?
And guess who's playing Freddie Mercury? You won't guess it. Sacha Baron Cohen.
Really? You're kidding me.
No. Do you think he can pull off Freddie Mercury?
Is it going to be a comedy?
No. Like, it's going to be... I don't think he would do a comedy biopic on Queen.
I think he plays his characters incredibly well. I don't know how that's going to come across. I feel like He's so talented. He's so talented.
I think he needs to do, I don't know if this would be the best role, but he needs to do something like a 180 from Borat and Bruno, because you can't go any further with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Freddie Mercury's a tough role to play, because I think a lot of people are going to take it as a comedic portrayal.
Hold on a second. The guy just played Borat, who's like, I'm sure the gay community loves Borat. Okay, I'm being sarcastic. But then you have Freddie Mercury, who is like a gay icon.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think anyone's going to... That's a tough role for him to play.
I'm very curious. I'm very curious to see that.
Daniel Markey. Hey, guys. Got a more recent car in... Oh. Hey, guys. I got a more recent wrestling moment involving a car when Cena gave Batista an FU on the card Over the Limit, which ended his career. Pretty lame, but it didn't finish a storyline. Also, I have some requests. UFC 30, which was the first UFC under Zuffa, showing a very different-looking Dana White and Jens Pulver coming out to the Hardy Boys theme, or the movie Slammed, starring Sasha Mitchell from Step by Step, Zachary Ty Bryan from Home Improvement, and cameos from Brian Kendrick, Sylvester Turkai, and Tiny Zeus Lister, and a few more that I can't remember. Wow. I've never heard of this movie, Slammed.
Slammed. Interesting. I think by this point, we've heard every single angle in professional wrestling that's ever involved a car.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. The moratorium has officially been put on that angle.
Richard Holm. I'm a bit behind on my RAW podcast. Only just listened to the September 5th edition. The four Stephanie weddings were Test, Undertaker, Higher Power, Triple H, and then the other Stephanie wedding that you didn't mention was the second wedding to Triple H when they renewed their wedding vows. The crowd were hot for this, and Stephanie looked damn fine. Interesting. Okay.
Wait a minute. Wasn't the Test and the first Hunter wedding the same angle?
I would say so.
Hunter came out and threw to the video.
It's been said somebody else brought up that...
Maybe, I guess they were two separate ceremonies.
Yeah, I guess so. Somebody else brought up that the Billy and Chuck wedding was a Stephanie orchestration.
I don't recall
well.
Her being part of that.
Well, she was the GM at the time.
Okay.
But I wouldn't consider that a Stephanie. Who cares? Who cares?
Scott Thompson, a bit late for the car contest, but about a week before Uncensored 97, the Outsiders chased the Steiner brothers in a car and pushed them off the road, causing the Steiner's car to flip, and Rick was removed from the pay-per-view. Wasn't a great angle, but helped give Team NWO the win. Thought the interview with Mitchell was great. For September, maybe review WCW War Games. A bad one that kind of pushed some storylines was 95, but a real good one was 96. Team WCW versus Team NWO. Keep up the great reviews.
Okay.
Flip the car.
Well, that was a good one.
No charges were laid.
Christopher Marquise Easley.
This is Chris from L.A.
Chris from L.A.? Oh, okay. I always thought it was C-H-R-I-S, but it's actually K-R-I-S. Okay.
No.
I gotta say that the tag team division in WWE has reached rock bottom.
5 exclamation points.
It has gotten so bad that if Jericho would have lost to the Hart Dynasty, I would have actually been offended. Those belts have zero credibility and need to be retired.
I don't think you have to retire the tag belts, just build up the division. Like, when Big Show and Jericho had them, they had really done a great job kind of rebuilding that division momentarily. Another one from Jermone Jackson. Will there ever be a comprehensive list of all of the Scott Putski Award winners? Well, if anyone out there wants to go back to all the podcasts of when we have announced a Scott Putski Award winner, be our guest.
Sure.
I do not have time, but I'm sure we've given out a lot.
Another one from Chris from LA. Okay, so for the first time, I actually sat through an episode of Jersey Shore at the urging of my girlfriend. And to quote Danny Glover, I'm too old for this shit. Not amused at all, but if y'all like it, more power to ya.
Jack Pisco, very much enjoyed the WoW review on your show. Wei seemed very understandably upset regarding the Asian stereotypes that were perpetrated on the pay-per-view. Only in wrestling would you find this kind of crap being pulled. That being said, as a visible minority myself, when I'm represented on TV or pay-per-view, I have to take it with a grain of salt, because in the end, I'm still watching. You probably don't appreciate the term grain of salt either, how it's used in pro wrestling. Not self-hating at all. Sometimes you gotta let shit slide.
Not on this podcast. I don't think so.
Wei is very thin-skinned.
Han Huyuan.
Han.
Han. Please lower... Please lower the volume of the opening song to the Jersey Shore review. Sometimes Wei is soft-spoken, so I turn the volume up, only to get Enrique blasting in my ears. Thanks. Wow, what an awful... It would be a terrible, terrible experience. And, John, I know you have made efforts over the past weeks to improve our audio quality.
Yes, hopefully this past Tuesday show sounded a bit better. We're using a level later now.
Please keep sending us feedback on what you think, because we'll only get better with your input.
Yeah, we're doing as much as we can with the tools we are given. Dashing Evan Harden. Great review again, guys. Last night when I was listening to you guys, it was the only thing that brought my joy for wrestling up again. Reason I say this is because I remember on an episode of Review Away that when you guys were reviewing the Great America Bash 2000, Wei said something about hating his life or something about that. Well, Wei, to top your description of how much you hated the Great American Bash, I'll describe how much I hated Raw on Monday night. It was like watching the lamest version of the TNA Impact, and it was like it took my soul for 2 hours and crushed it into little pieces. The only good things that happened on Raw was Edge being there, because he's full of awesomeness, and the fact that Jericho called Michael Cole an idiot. I remember watching Unforgiven 2001. That was the pay-per-view that WWE made Booker look like a moron. Chronic versus Undertaker and Kane was all right, but the match of the pay-per-view definitely went to Jericho and Mr. Pay-per-view Rob Van Dam.
Well, I completely disagree about Raw. I mean, I didn't think it was that bad. I've heard a lot of people say they hated this past episode of Raw, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was entertaining throughout. Maybe because I didn't watch it with commercials, or maybe I was in a good mindset at the time. Who knows? And I completely, completely disagree about that Chronic match. Corey Hartigan, do you guys think that Vince McMahon will ever write a book? Maybe a memoir? I'd buy it in an instant.
I don't think he will.
Too busy.
Scott McCullough, just for certain people's information, a bangle is a type of jewelry, as well as an all-girls 80s band. And the team is the Ben, as in Ben Mulrooney or Ben Johnson, Gulls. Sorry, that bothered me.
As it should have. As it should have bothered you whenever John Pollock is wrong about something.
The Cincinnati Bengals, everybody.
Nick Newberry. Guys, child please is a nice way of saying fuck you and wasn't made PG just for the show. It's kind of his catchphrase. Okay, cool. I stand corrected.
Andrew McMahon. We now have wrestling in 3D. Warner Bros. Is showing the 60-minute G1 Climax special in 14 cinemas in Japan. Could you imagine watching the G1 Climax in 3D?
In 3D.
That's crazy.
Huh. How would that work? I guess like a diving move would be like leaping right into your...
Yeah, that'd be crazy. I'd love to watch wrestling in 3D.
That'd be cool.
At least once.
Yeah. Aram Nasrallah. Hey, John and Wei, I can't wait for the Unforgiven 2001 review. I thought the show was quite good except for the Chronic match and the Saturn-Raven match. I remember watching WCW in 2000 on a Danish channel. Chronic was in the ring, and my big brother came in and laughed because he was glad that he didn't watch wrestling anymore because it was retarded, he said. I didn't know until he told me that what Chronic was, so what bonehead came up with that name? Special request, can you review the 2010 VMAs? Since you both enjoy music a lot and Jersey Shore was involved in it, I would love to listen to your opinions on the show. And am I the only one who wants to beat some of the celebrities up in an MMA match? Maybe it's just me, but I will never understand why someone like Lindsay Lohan and Justin Bieber can be famous. But anyway, thanks for the countless hours of entertainment.
First of all, for the VMAs... best way to watch it is on a PVR. I watched it in 34 minutes this week.
Thank you.
And the production is the main thing I watch for every year. I'm blown away by the production of the show. Yeah. The actual show is just... they had Chelsea Handler as the host this year, who is...
Who?
Exactly. They had performances by like Justin Bieber, Usher. They had Linkin Park. They did that song Catalyst, the one we played a few weeks ago, where they had them out in this like observatory.
Yeah.
It looked crazy.
Was it good?
The actual show? No, it wasn't a good show. It was some of the performance. The Linkin Park one, it was a pretty interesting performance. Like very well done.
When I was a teenager and like
Lady Gaga won like every award.
Yeah, I used to look forward to that awards show more
Me
than
too.
Any other
yeah.
awards show. It just seemed like the most fun, you know, and the grandest that catered towards me in terms of production. It wasn't stuck up like the Grammys or something like that.
I love the year Chris Rock hosted it, like 1999. Yeah. Great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Maybe
with the Spice Girls.
Did the Spice Girls host it once?
No, the Spice Girls were on that show that Chris Rock hosted. Anyway, I don't think we'll be reviewing this year's.
No.
This was our review.
I watched it very briefly. Not a whole lot stood out for me. All right, Matt or James. Regarding Riot's twisting elbow drop, I think for this particular instance, John was correct. Riot was spinning her elbow away from Wendy Wheels and not spinning her elbow towards Wendy's chest. Way would be correct if Riot was spinning her elbow towards the chest of Wendy, thus adding that extra force. Someone who is better with physics or science, correct me if I am wrong.
This is absolutely
great message.
Actually makes a lot of sense. But then you could say the same thing about like a shooting star press. What about something like that? You're spinning away from the opponent.
Yeah, 450 would be much more logical.
Anyway. I like this discussion, though.
In like 25 years, there's going to be like, you know, cruiserweights today complaining about the lack of psychology. It's like back when we did 8,000 moves, they all meant something. Like
yes.
A shooting star was a... It makes no sense.
Yes. Traverse Cummings. Hey, guys, I wasn't able to catch Raw this week, but I did manage to see some of the highlights. The Morrison-Sheamus match was pretty good. I can't believe it has taken this long for them to realize that Morrison is pretty damn good, minus his mic skills. In 6 months to a year from now, I could totally see him and Miz feuding over the heavyweight title. It's safe to say Miz should have it by then. I also think the guest host is going to turn out to be the Raw GM. I think it is what he means. I think the Raw GM is going to turn out to be some sort of babyface, since it looks like Jericho and Edge will be the ones to uncover the mystery. I was happy to hear that Chad Ocho Cinco was the guest, whatever they call it now. I am a huge football fan, and although his interactions with The Miz may not come off well on TV, this guy is one of the top heels in the NFL. He has probably been fined more than anyone due to his outrageous touchdown celebrations. All right.
Brian Kwan, what would you guys choose for free? Number one, ringside seats for a UFC event with the expo attached, backstage passes, and meet and greet. Or two, ringside seats for a WrestleMania event with expo attached, backstage passes, and a meet and greet. Would you rather go to a UFC show or WrestleMania, Way?
You know what? Honestly, I think it would have to do with who was on the card.
That would definitely depend on it. If it was a Brock Lesnar fight, I would pick that.
Yeah.
However, if it was just about any other UFC thing, I would probably pick WrestleMania.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really enjoy going to UFCs live. I've been to two now, and I much rather prefer watching it at home.
See, I don't really enjoy watching pro wrestling live.
I'm not a big fan of it either. I guess they're saying ringside seats.
It could be different. I've never sat ringside before. But I would say for me, like 8 times out of 10, I'd probably pick the UFC main events. They definitely intrigue me more than... It's tough to say. I mean, like going into this WrestleMania, I was really, really amped up for this year's WrestleMania, which didn't turn out to be as good as I hoped. But yeah, that's my answer.
All right. You're up.
Oh, Matt Cruz. Hey guys, did anyone notice that Chris Jericho was not only wearing wrestling boots during his promo this week on Raw, but he also had knee pads under his suit? I thought it was pretty funny. Also, I think that JR wouldn't be a disappointment as the GM As for bad car angles, how about when the Big Boss Man dragged the Big Show's dad's coffin out of its grave during his funeral? Big Show flopping off of the coffin is so bad it's ridiculous.
I thought that storyline was horrible.
As most Big Show angles are.
Andrew Patterson. It's pronounced Bengals with an E. And thanks to your insisting that there's an animal called a bangle roaming the jungles, I now have eternal flame stuck in my head.
Yeah, but there is. Like a Bengal tiger.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, never mind. Sean Olinkin, new Raw GM, Mike the Situation.
Not happening. Warren Bernier, Armando Estrada for Raw GM. Definitely not happening, and big letdown if it would be.
Justin Foe, what about David Arquette for General Manager? That's a winner.
No, it's not. Muhammad Al-Zubaydi, response to review of Raw GM questions. Would be fantastic if it was either The Rock or Macho Man Randy Savage, but neither of those two would ever happen. Well, thank you for that contribution.
Jay Hunter, GM that wouldn't be a disappointment, but could actually possibly happen. The Rock for a short run.
No.
Macho Man.
No.
Iron Sheik would be amazing.
No, it wouldn't.
Vince Russo, if he ever left TNA.
Oh, God, no.
I'd effing love Jesse Ventura as GM, as he did a fantastic job as guest host, cutting some shoot-inspired promos. What do you think, Jesse Ventura?
They did not leave on good terms after that GM spot, but it wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure Ventura will be back at some point. I don't think he's going to be the GM, though, no.
With regards to the Rod roulette wheel, I imagine that it's actually motorized and can be set on the back of the wheel to land on a specific segment. Getting someone to manually change/stop the wheel seems really difficult and impractical. I bet in TNA, if they had a roulette wheel, they'd actually legitimately not know the stipulation the wheel would land on and do it on the fly.
Another one from Jack Pisco. This is a response to your question about the GM. The only person it could be that wouldn't be a total letdown is Triple H. Really? The reason is because when he returns, he's going to be a face, and the GM is clearly one. I would say no, it has not clearly been a GM. This is a guy who said Bret Hart has been banished from the show, and he hates him.
Yeah.
Also, to have the big blow-off with Edge, Jericho, and eventually Sheamus, you need someone who can work matches and not just a worthless mouthpiece. Lastly, watching Raw, I want to see a Miz Morrison feud for the heavyweight title. Well, they have to do a lot with Morrison then. We have a potentially great angle that is never fully explored with the Rockers, Edge and Christian, and the Hardy Boys. When these teams split up, they never had matches to determine which one was better than the other. At least nothing I can recall.
Definitely not that Unforgiven match.
No,
between Edge and Christian.
And the Hardys, their feud both times was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah. Snorri Goljonsson. I would love it if the GM was Kevin Nash. There we have the smart thinking man that can stand up to anyone, and that would also explain why he was anonymous, and that would make his debut right after his TNA contract expires.
Could they not make a case that that would be
Kevin Nash?
They made Kevin Nash a part of their storylines when he was under contract to another company.
Yes, that's right.
What would be the legalities there?
I don't know.
And we'll finish off with Richard Holm. What odds on the Raw GM being Stephanie McMahon? I don't think we're going to see her on TV for it. She's had another kid.
It's not going to stop
Who
her.
Knows? Maybe it'll be Hunter and Steph together.
You know what? They could do that. They could make it two people.
Be a shoot then.
I just think at this point, anyone they announce will be a disappointment.
Okay. We'll finish off here, everyone. I mentioned a contest idea, and this kind of entered my head this morning. I was on my way to work here. We were reviewing Unforgiven today following the 9/11 tragedies in the United States. And, of course, the WWE did that SmackDown show following it, where the promo that usually everyone points to on that show was the Stephanie McMahon promo, where if you have not heard it, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. And she essentially tries to equate what happened to those people in the towers to the same way that the U.S. government persecuted her father during the 94 steroid distribution trial. It was probably one of the most tasteless things the WWE has ever done, but it's definitely not the only tasteless thing they have ever done. So what I want to ask you, that you can post on our Facebook wall, what is the most offensive angle you have ever seen in wrestling? And this is not limited to WWE. You can go way back in time. You can go to WCW, current, whatever you want. And a storyline where basically your moral compass was officially thrown out the window when it comes to how you watch pro wrestling. I have one angle specifically in mind that after I watched it, I can definitely say my standards for pro wrestling were pretty much out the window, and I no longer had any expectations about taste being present in pro wrestling.
That could be anything.
It could be. So this could be something as stupid as a dumb stip match. It could be something like Stephanie McMahon's promo. I'd appreciate alternate ideas than the Stephanie promo. But write down your reasoning. You're welcome to include a link to the said angle. But we want to see the most offensive angle that maybe even drove you off of watching wrestling, or at the very least changed your viewing experience and expectations of pro wrestling.
Wow. I think this is a great contest idea.
Because we all know, deep down, we focus on the negative. And I think sometimes there's, it's, I don't know. Some people get on people for being jaded. And I think you look at the history of pro wrestling and how their audiences are treated. Wrestling fans are treated like idiots a lot of the time by promotions.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I feel stupid. Right now.
Okay, so that's the contest for next week, everyone. And we'll give out a prize to the best explanation for an angle.
Get your entries in. I guess I would recommend getting them in as soon as possible because the less time you have, the more of the best choices will be taken.
The cutoff will be, I'll guess, this Thursday at noon, okay. Eastern time. So get your paragraphs or memories posted on the wall. And only post them on the wall. Don't send... I know some people send us feedback, like as private messages or emails. It's like, just put it on the wall. That's where we go for our feedback. And invariably, I forget to include messages if they're sent other ways.
And you know what? For this one, let's set it out there. Please only submit one per Facebook.
Well, yeah, that's Shy. One entry.
We love you, Shy. We love your participation, but let's not flood the wall with only one person.
You get so think about it before you post it. You get one shot at this. With that being said, Wei, you've got the pick for next week and what we'll be reviewing. So what do you want to chat about?
Well, last weekend, you and I and Jay and Dan, we all attended the Raw House Show in Hamilton where we had a meet and greet at Gibson's Lounge, and we sat at a table next to a faithful listener, Mark Cardoso, who, upon my arrival, handed me a DVD that he hand-printed a cover to with our Review Away Review a Raw logo on the top of it. And inside were two DVDs, and one of which features a movie that I would like to review next week. It is the Dave Bautista movie, co-starring Rob Van Dam, and who else was in that?
That's it.
Okay, anyway, a straight-to-DVD movie starring David Bautista, and you know the name of it, John, it escapes me. Wrong Side of Town. If you know Torrent Link or whatever for it, recommend you watch it, give us your feedback, we'll be reviewing a movie. Dave Bautista.
I did contact Batista's people to try and have him on the show.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
He declined. So, Bautista will not be on this show next week, everybody. But nonetheless, I tried. So that is what we will review next week. Wrong Side of Town, starring Bautista and Rob Van Dam. And we'll also run down the worst and most offensive angles in wrestling history. Should be a very, very fun show. And going out here, I thought we would go out with the Bangles with an A. Some song, because I don't know any.
All the old paintings on the tomb, they do the sand dance, don't you know? If you move too quick, go away, they're falling down like a domino. On the bus, our men by the night, they got the money on a bed. All crocodiles, go away, they snap their teeth on your cigarette.
street, bend your back, shift your arm, then you pull it back. Let's hard to know.
Oh, hey, oh.
So strike a pose on a Cadillac. If you want to find all the cops, they're hanging out in the donut shop. They sing and dance.
Oh, hey, oh.
They spin the club crew down the block. All the Japanese, the Betty and the party boys call the Gremlin. And the Chinese know.
Oh, hey, oh.
They walk the line like Egyptian. All the cops in the donut shop say. Egyptian. Walk like an Egyptian.